Thank you, Ruth. I was in the corridor just before the service, and I met Roy, and I said to Roy, "Are you ready for the reading this morning?" And he said, "Oh, yes." He said, "I've checked it. It's only three verses. What are you going to say on three verses?" I didn't like to tell him I was actually going to base my sermon on four words out of those three verses. And the four words were, "As it turned out." All Christians believe in the sovereignty of God. We believe that even in the most confusing moments, God is at work in us and through us and all around us. But sometimes it's easier to doubt God's plan than to believe it. Looking around here and imagining those who are watching online and catch up or listening in the phone, I imagine that today we represent a whole range of different stories: the good, the bad, and the ugly. And all of us need the grace of God. And to believe that God has not brought us thus far to cause us to fail. What we're talking about, in theological words, is God's providence. In other words, we believe that when God created the world, he didn't just walk off and leave us to get on with it because there was something more interesting to do, but that God has remained intimately involved with our world day by day, and also in the unfolding story of our church, of our world, and of our lives. And that means, if it is true, that while God has the big picture before him, he also cares about the tiniest details of his life. He cares about the small as well as the big. In fact, in God's understanding, there is no small or big. He knows when a sparrow hops to the ground or how many hairs there are in your head. But he also keeps track of the stars in the sky and the rivers that flow to the oceans. He knows the date of our birth and the date of our death and everything that happens in between. And this God uses everything and wastes nothing. There are no accidents with God, only incidents. And that includes events which to us may seem senseless tragedies. And behind all that God is doing in making a new heaven and a new earth, he wants those he has made in his image, the men and women, to become like Jesus himself. And sometimes we are changed the most in difficult moments and even human tragedy. But what is clear in the story of the Bible is that God does not roll dice. Nothing ever happens by chance. And I want to start by telling you a story to spell out what this means and what it doesn't mean about the balance between God being in charge and us making responsible decisions for our lives. Let me try and paint a scene. Here's Harry. Harry's going to church, and he pulls out of his drive in his two-seater sports car, grateful that he's repaired the leak in his hood because it's been raining heavily since dawn. And so there's no sign of letting up. And as he turns the corner into the road, the main road along which it leads to the church, he sees three figures huddled forlornly under a single umbrella beside the bus stop. And they're all familiar because they all attend Harry's church. There was old Mrs. Fosdyke, well over 70, and she suffered great pain from her rheumatism and her arthritis, which always got worse in damp weather. And then there was Dr. Roberts, the local GP, and Harry owed him a huge personal debt because one time he'd been on holiday abroad and he contracted a rare and dangerous illness, and it was Dr. Roberts who had successfully identified it and had it treated. The third person under this one umbrella as the rain fell down was Julia. And Harry had had a burning passion for Julia ever since she'd come to live in the area. though secretly, for he had found no opportunity to ask her out. As Harry neared the bus stop, he glanced at the solitary passenger seat in his little car. What should he do? He only had a few seconds to make the decision, but it was enough. With an impressive screech of the brakes, he drew up at the bus stop. Magnanimously, he presented the car keys to Dr. Roberts. Attentively, he lowered Mrs. Fosdyke into the passenger seat. Then, with a modest wave, he waved them goodbye while he huddled close to Julia under the umbrella, praying that the number 8 bus would be even later than usual that day. The point I'm trying to make is that in this story, meeting the right person is almost invariably the result of a happy collusion between good fortune and good sense, or in Christian speak, between divine providence and human responsibility. God put Julia by the bus stop, but Harry had to work out how to get under the umbrella. And it will often be like that. Indeed, it's the cooperation between God's control of events and our personal initiative in exploiting opportunities that forms the necessary background not just to a successful love life, but to the life of faith generally. And there are few more charming examples of that interplay than the story of Ruth that we've been looking at over the last couple of weeks. You remember how in a time of famine, Elimelech had moved his family to Moab, but while he was there, Elimelech first, then later his two sons died. Now that's not the sort of background that is calculated to deepen your trust in a caring God. And yet it is this book that people have turned to again and again to find hope that God cares for us. By the time Naomi prepares to travel home to Bethlehem, 10 years have passed, but she doesn't travel alone because Ruth, her daughter-in-law, commits to staying with her. It was, humanly speaking, a crazy decision. Judah had been a dangerous place. Naomi was poverty-stricken. The land of Elimelech, which was still theirs, hadn't been worked on for 10 years, and it would take 6 months at least before it began to yield an income. And in the meantime, the only hope for these two women was to depend on the goodwill of others. And behind that all, to go back to a foreign land probably meant the end of any hope she had of marriage in the future. She was a foreigner. She had no dowry. 10 years marriage and no children. There were question marks over her fertility. And yet, behind the scenes, God was at work. Indeed, Ruth the Moabitess would never have come to Bethlehem, would never have known the God of Israel, would never have played the extraordinary part that we shall see unfold. Well, I'll wait till it unfolds, I'll tell you the extraordinary part she plays. Was it not for the misfortune that befell Naomi? At this point in the story, rather like the fraction of the Mona Lisa I showed earlier, all Naomi could do was to blame God. It had been a rotten 10 years. Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Don't call me pleasant, call me bitter. The Lord's made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. The Lord has afflicted me. He has brought misfortune on me. Now, Naomi's theology was not at fault. She knew that God was behind the scenes. What she didn't know was that God had still the last word to speak, and that would change everything. Our opening hymn, God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. And later, judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. Indeed, let me go further and say, if Elimelech, Naomi's husband, hadn't made the wrong decision to go to Moab during the famine, the story of Ruth would never have got beyond chapter 1, verse 1. And I want to say something which for some of you may be very helpful this morning. Because I meet people who torture themselves with vain regrets. If only, they say, I hadn't made that mistake. And then they go on to say, and because of doing that, I'm sure I've forfeited God's purpose for me by that early act of folly. I want to say lovingly, that's complete nonsense. Where in the Bible do human mistakes ever obstruct his purpose? Nowhere. In fact, the Bible constantly testifies that God, by his master strokes of consummate skill, can achieve his purposes, even using our mistakes for his glory. So please, do not let past mistakes feel that you're somehow on God's second plan for your life rather than his best. Mistakes happen and consequences remain. The bud may have a bitter taste, but Naomi found in trusting God that the flower was sweet when it bloomed. So let's go back to the story. Here are these two widows, one elderly, one not so. They're returning to Bethlehem. It's April. It's the time of the barley harvest. And there is a sense with the harvest that just as the famine is lifted, that perhaps the whole story is going to change key. And these three verses start to map out the change and show us something extraordinary. For we will discover that God will put Boaz by the bus stop. And Ruth now has to find a way to get under the umbrella. God's fingerprints are over all of this beautiful story. Every detail counts. Nothing is added simply as filler. And the three things I notice in these three verses is first, he prepares the people. We first of all are introduced to Boaz, a relative of Elimelech. He's a man of high standing. The phrase noble character can mean mighty warrior or man of great wealth. Maybe he's all of these. He's a man of character, a mighty warrior, and a man of wealth. He is the right man in the right place at the right time. He just doesn't know it yet. And the author wants us to be aware of that fact. For the man of Ruth's dreams is there, even though she's not dreaming at all. He's waiting in the wings like Julia by the bus stop. If God is so involved in our lives, here's what it means for you and me. Are you worried about next week? Forget it. God is already there. How about next year? Don't lose sleep of it. He's already there. I'm going to give you a second theological phrase just to bolster you this morning. There is a phrase theologians use called the prevenient grace of God. And it simply means this, the grace that goes before. It means that God is not just at work alongside us as we go alive. He's actually ahead of us preparing our way. In other words, while I'm living in Tuesday, God's clearing the road for me on Friday. God is already working to provide solutions for problems I'm not even aware I'm going to have to face. So if you're worried about next week, forget it. What about the crucial meeting? Sleep well. He's already there. What about that tough decision that lies ahead? Don't worry. What about scared that you might spill the water all over Cara? Whew, didn't happen. Things are okay. Because God is not only beside us, he goes ahead of us, working in the future as we live in the present. Naomi doesn't know it. Naomi doesn't believe it, not yet. But God was preparing Boaz for just this meeting. He doesn't know it. Ruth doesn't know it. But God is on the case. And so secondly, we see how the plan begins to unfold. When they get there and they get settled in, Ruth says, right, we've got to do something to put food on the table. I'm going to go out tomorrow, it's the harvest time, and I'm going to gather some of the fallen grain and see if I can get enough so that we can have a meal tonight and tomorrow. After all, Ruth is younger than Naomi and probably in better physical shape. And the work that she was volunteering for was hard, hot, bat-breaking work. She had for hours to follow the reapers and hope that they didn't pick up everything, but left just a few grains here and there for her to have to make food of. Because God had commanded the people of God that when it was harvest time, whatever kind of harvest it was, not to forget the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, but to leave some of the harvest for them to pick up after the main harvest was gathered. And what's impressive about Ruth is she doesn't, having made the great gesture to go, now succumb to self-pity. She says, I'm willing to work my socks off in order to look after this woman whom I admire and love. And I'm just going to do the best I can and trust that God will do the rest. It's hard labor. It's menial labor. It's manual labor. But she's doing something. Now, let's be quite clear. She has not gone into the fields to find a husband. Working in the fields was not the dating agency in the Old Testament. She's working in the fields because she needs some food. That's all she's thinking about. Food for the table, food for her mother-in-law. And that leads us to the last point in this story. She comes into this huge field. And this huge field would have been parceled out with different families. So Eliezer would be working over here, and Caleb would be working over here, and Jacob would be working over here, and part of it would belong to Boaz. And the owners would use stones or other markers to separate in the field whose was whose. So when Ruth goes into the field, she has no idea that the bit of the field she's working in actually belongs to Boaz. For those who love the King James Version, there's a lovely expression, the expression I've used right at the beginning when I said, I can find my notes turning back because I forgot the name, as it turned out, in the Authorized Version it says, her hap was to light. Isn't that lovely? Her hap was to light, which means as it turned out. And yet nothing just happens in God's world, to God's people. From the fall of a raindrop to the fall of an empire, all is under the providential control of God. Boaz hasn't met Ruth. Ruth isn't planning to meet Boaz, but God's will is going to be unpacked. And maybe it's helpful to say this. God's will is often discovered more like a sunrise than a sunburst. It's not suddenly God's will becomes clear to us. No, we see a glimmer of light and we edge towards it, but there's still darkness all around. And then we see another glimmer of light and we follow that. And then gradually the darkness begins to lift and we begin to see the light of day. No quick answers, no easy answers. No answers that keep us from pain or trouble or difficulty. But through our good times and our bad times, through our wisdom and through our folly, through our laughter and through our tears, God can be trusted. And God was bringing together these people, each making their own choices. But in the final act, a choice that will be for their good and for God's glory. Sometimes circumstances are the fingerprint of God. But sometimes we can only see a tiny bit. The rest is hidden from our sight. That's why in faith we say, God, we trust you for this week. That's why in humility we say, we can't see how this is going to work out, but we believe in you. That's why in hope we say, God knows what's going on. I'll have to rest in that. So the path ahead may be a mystery. You go on a journey, you don't know what's round the next bend. It may be a smooth road through a lovely valley. It may be we find the bridge ahead has been washed out, and we've got to find another way of crossing the water. The road might disappear. We might find ourselves with three directions, having to choose. But God knows the way. I finish with this. God has not brought us this far to cause us to fail. If that is true, then there is no such thing as luck or fate or chance. Sunday by Sunday, at the end of our worship, we rest in the Lord. We lay our life of ourselves and our loved ones on the solid rock of God's eternal providence and say, it's over to you now. We've done our best. Please take us safely through. So what happens next? You'll have to stay tuned and come back. Not next week, because it's harvest. Not the week after, because it's national giving. You're going to wait for 3 weeks. Bated breath. I once had an elder phone me up and said, I can't wait. Am I allowed to read ahead in my Bible to see what happens? You're always allowed to read ahead and see what happens. But let's see where God leads us. Amen.